horrified. "I doubt she was horrified," Hecate said. "Surprised, perhaps. Maybe even mortified if her thoughts were anything like yours." Hecate gave him a knowing look, but Hades was not so sure. Hecate had not been there. "I have never known you to back down from a challenge, Hades." "I haven't," he said. He had done the opposite. He had, essentially, bound her to him for the next 6 months. Hecate waited for him to explain. "She played me."
"What?"
"She invited me to her table for a game, and she lost," Hades explained. "By tomorrow morning, his mark would appear on Persephone's skin, and when she returned to him, he would offer her the terms of their contract. If she failed, she would be a resident of the underworld forever."
"Hades, you didn't."
He just looked at the witch goddess. "It is divine law," he said. Hecate glared, knowing that was not true. Hades could have chosen to let her go with no demands upon her time, and he had chosen not to. If the fates were going to connect them, why not take control?
"Do you not want her love? Why would you force her into a contract?"
After a moment, he admitted aloud, "Because I did not think she would come back." He did not look at Hecate, but her silence told him she pitied him, and he hated that.
"What will you ask of her?" she inquired.
"What I ask of everyone," he said. He would challenge the insecurities of her soul. By the end of it, he would create a queen or a monster, which he did not know.
"How do you feel when you look at her?" Hecate asked.
Hades did not like that question, or maybe he didn't like his answer, but he spoke truthfully nonetheless. "Like I was born from chaos."
Hecate grinned. "I can already tell I'm going to like her."
Then her eyes flashed with amusement.
"You must tell Minthe you are to wed when I am present. She will be furious."
Chapter 5. A Contract Sealed.
Hades found himself in Tartarus. In the beginning of his reign, he came here more often than any other place in his realm. Post-Titanomachy had been a dark time. Born of war, Hades knew nothing else but blood and pain, but he had not spent his time in Tartarus out of a wish to exist with the familiar. He did so out of a wish to punish those responsible for his dark beginning, the Titans. Over time, he had needed that less and less. On rare occasions, he still came to channel residual rage. Tonight was no different. He stood in his office, a cavernous but modern room at the peak of one of the mountains of Tartarus. It doubled as a chamber of torture, its walls covered with weapons Hades had used on many unfortunate humans and humanoids who found themselves restrained before him, many of them holding secrets, even in the afterlife. Part of the floor was glass, and from this elevated space, Hades looked down upon level after level of torture. Over the years, the prison had evolved. It had begun underground, with levels spanning miles and miles, all dedicated to punishing the most wicked of crimes and torturing souls in absurd ways, with wind, icy rain, and fire, and the more efficient sentences of choking on tar, eagles and vultures eating livers, and flesh being torn from bodies by razor-sharp teeth. While these forms of torture still existed, Hades evolved with the world above, carving out the mountains and creating isolated cells for various forms of psychological torture. Whatever the variety, Hades only cared that it produced the same result: suffering. Hades swiped a bottle of whiskey from his desk and took a drink before snapping his fingers, summoning a soul. The man was the one Sisyphus had shot dead in the yard of his fishery, Isidore Angelos. His hands were bound behind his back, his legs restrained. His chin rested against his chest. He was asleep. Souls tended to continue in the underworld as they did in the upper world,
meaning they stuck to routine, even though they did not need it. Sleep was an example of this. "Well, isn't he handsome?" Hermes said, appearing in Hades' office. The god of trickery often came and went from his realm, having taken the role of Psychopomp, a guide to souls, centuries ago. Hades glanced at him. The god was in his divine form, gilded and garish. He had great white wings and a pair of short horns that poked out of the side of his head, almost invisible amid his curls. His golden eyes appraised the mortal. "Do not ogle the prisoners, Hermes," Hades said. "What? I can appreciate beauty." "With your track record, no. You tend to forget what is beneath the skin." "I also tend to have mind-blowing sex," Hermes said, sighing. "It is a sacrifice I'm willing to make." At that, Hades turned away from the god, rolled his eyes, and swirled the liquid in his bottle before taking another drink. "Perhaps if you got laid more often, you wouldn't feel the need to torture your subjects," Hermes said. Hades grinded his teeth, something he had done all day. His jaw would hurt tomorrow. Hermes' words frustrated him for two reasons: that the god felt the need to comment on his sex life at all, and because his thoughts turned to the beautiful Persephone. He felt a tightening in his groin that almost made him groan. "Has anyone ever told you you might need therapy?" Hermes asked. "Because I'm pretty sure torturing people is a sign of psychopathy." Hades glared at Hermes, who was now holding a cattle prod. Suddenly, it sparked, making a terrible clicking sound. The god yelped and dropped it immediately. Hades raised a brow. Sometimes it was hard to remember that Hermes was actually a skilled warrior. "What?" he challenged. "It scared me." Hades swiped the cattle prod from the ground and turned toward the man named Isidore, sitting in the center of his office, then said, "Wake." The man's head lolled, and his eyes opened and closed, heavy with fatigue. Hades waited while the mortal familiarized himself with his surroundings, only speaking when he saw recognition on his face. "Welcome to my realm," Hades said. Isidore's eyes widened.
Am I in Tartarus?"
Hades did not answer. Instead, he said, "You are impious." The impious were mortals and immortals alike who rejected the gods when they came to Earth during the Great Descent for a number of reasons. Some felt abandoned, some felt the gods were hypocrites, others no longer wished to be ruled. In the end, the two sides went to war, the impious and the faithful. Hades had not been eager to join in the fight. After all, it did not matter which side he joined. His realm would grow either way. "And a loyal member of Triad," Hades said. Triad was a group of impious mortals who opposed the gods, demanding fairness, free will, and freedom. They called themselves activists. The Olympians called them terrorists.
Triad? What makes you think I'm a member of Triad?"
He stared at the man for a moment. He did not like answering questions, did not really like speaking at all, but he would answer this, as it might prevent the man from trying to lie further. "Three reasons," Hades said. "One, you stutter when you lie. Second, even if you did not stutter when you lie, I can sense lies. Yours are bitter, and they taste like ash, a mark of your soul. Third, if you do not want to advertise your allegiance, you should not tattoo it upon your skin." Hades noted how the man's eyes drifted to his right arm, where the triangle, the symbol of Triad, was inked.
"So you will torture me for my allegiance?"
"I will torture you for your crimes," Hades said. "The fact that you are a member of Triad is merely a bonus." Isidore gave a guttural cry as Hades shoved the cattle prod into his side. The smell of burnt flesh filled his nostrils. After a few seconds, he pulled away. The mortal's back was arched, his breathing harsh. gods, Hades, do you really have to do this? Hermes asked, but he made no move to cover his eyes or even look disgusted.
Don't pretend you haven't tortured a mortal, Hermes. We all know differently. Hades spat.
As the cattle prod sparked again, the man glared at Hades and challenged.
I've been tortured before.
Hades smiled wickedly.
Not by me.
The cattle prod was just the beginning of Isidore's torture. Hades moved from electrocution to fire, setting the ground beneath the man's feet aflame, keeping him alive as the flames licked his skin. He screamed, inhaling smoke, which made him cough until blood spilled from his mouth. At some point, Hades doused the flames with his magic, and in the quiet aftermath, Hermes spoke.
You are seriously fucked up, Hades.
You.
Isidore's voice rasped. His chest rose and fell slowly.
You think you are untouchable because you are gods.
That's exactly why we are untouchable, Hermes said. Hades held up his hand, silencing the god of trickery.
You don't know what is coming,
Isidore continued, voice hollow. His head lolled to the side, and he was no longer looking at Hades but the wall. The god gripped the mortal's charred face so he would look at him.
Hades,
Hermes started to say.
What's coming?
Hades demanded.
War,
the man answered. It was almost noon, and Hades had yet to sleep. His eyes felt like sandpaper, and Hermes' voice grated in his ears. The god had followed him back to his palace and now walked beside him as he made his way to his bedchamber.
Hades took a drink from the bottle he had brought from his office in Tartarus.
You could have told me you were torturing him for information, Hermes complained.
Are you saying if I had told you, you would have refrained from telling me how fucked up I am? Hades asked.
Hermes opened his mouth to reply, but Hades spoke instead, a rare occasion.
Triad is reorganizing. I need your eyes and ears.
Hermes laughed.
You aren't actually afraid of them, are you?
We went to war with Triad, Hermes. It could happen again. Do not underestimate mortals desperate for freedom.
Hermes narrowed his eyes. It sounds like you sympathize with them. Hades met the god's gaze and answered as he always did.
What is evil to one is a fight for freedom to another.
He had said it before, and he would say it again. The problem he had with Triad was the innocent lives they took with them during their fight.
Do not let your hubris blind you, Hermes.
This time, when Hades started toward his chambers, the god did not follow. As soon as Hades was inside his room, he sighed, pressing his fingers to his temple. It had been a long time since he had had a headache, but this day was endless. Hades crossed the room to his fireplace and finished off his whiskey. He stared down at the empty bottle, contemplating the day's, yesterday's, events. He had bargained and murdered and tortured. All things he was certain his future wife would disapprove of.
Future wife. Fucking fates.
Hades threw the bottle, and it shattered against the black marble wall.
I am going to have to stop breaking things when she gets here, he thought, and then scolded himself for sounding so hopeful.
He sighed angrily and stared toward his bed, loosening his tie. His eyes had started to burn. He needed sleep. In a matter of hours, he had to be up again. He had another important appointment to make. This one in his own territory, Iniquity, an exclusive club where the worst of society gathered under his protection and rule. Just as he pulled back the covers, a knock sounded at the door.
Go away, he said, thinking it had to be Minthy.
Instead, Ilias's voice answered.
Oh, I think you'll want to hear this, my lord.
Hades sighed.
Yes.
Ilias entered, arching a dark brow and smiling wryly.
No rest for the wicked. The woman from last night is outside Nevernight fighting with Duncan. He has placed his hands upon her. You had better hurry.
Hades could not describe the feeling that overcame him, but it was like everything inside him had frozen for a second. His blood did not rush, his heart did not pump, his lungs did not expand. As quick as the ice entered his veins, it was gone, replaced by red-hot fury.
"Why didn't you say something sooner?" he snapped, before teleporting to the entrance of Nevernight.
On the other side of the door, a familiar voice threatened.
"I am Persephone, goddess of spring, and if you would like to keep your fleeting life, then you will obey me."
Hades threw open the door. He felt frantic until his eyes settled upon the goddess, and then he was stunned. She stood on the lackluster sidewalk, beneath the too bright sun, stripped of her human glamour. White kudu horns sprouted from her wild hair, and despite their height, he couldn't help thinking how petite she appeared. He liked seeing her this way. It felt intimate somehow, because he knew he was seeing her. This was Persephone, the goddess who would be his queen, and she was everything. She did not meet his gaze, but her eyes were definitely on him, trailing his frame with an intensity in her expression he couldn't quite place but wanted to understand. Despite feeling as if he had no control over his body, his emotions, his magic, he composed himself as best he could and spoke.
"Lady Persephone."
Her title felt heavy on his tongue, and at his words she met his gaze, and again he was startled by her bright eyes,
as wild as the rivers of Tartarus and as green as the Asphodel Valley.
Something changed in her composure when she looked at him. She straightened her shoulders and lifted her chin.
"Lord Hades?"
She addressed him formally and offered a sharp nod. He was not sure what he did not like about it, the fact that she had used his title or her ceremonial body language. He frowned but could not think long on the subject because Duncan drew his attention.
"My lord."
The ogre sank to his knees and hung his head low.
"I did not know she was a goddess. I accept punishment for my actions."
"Punishment?" Persephone echoed. She crossed her arms over her chest as if she were uncomfortable with the idea. Hades gritted his teeth. The same fury that had overcome him in the underworld blazed again.
"I laid my hands upon a goddess,"
Duncan said.
"And a woman at that,"
Hades added unhappily. Duncan had it wrong. His impending punishment had nothing to do with the fact that he had touched someone of divine blood. It was that he had hurt a woman. Hades was not tolerant of violence against women or children.
In fact, he hated it so much, there was a special level in Tartarus for those responsible of such crimes,
and their punishments were doled out by the Furies themselves. The three feared goddesses of vengeance, Nemesis, the goddess of retribution, and Hecate, who took it upon herself to personally punish abusers. No human or humanoid was excused, whether in Hades' employment or not.
"I will deal with you later," Hades promised.
"Now, Lady Persephone." He stepped aside, making room for her to enter Nevernight. She did not hesitate like he thought she might, entering the darkness of his club like she owned it. He shut the door behind her, and for a moment they were trapped together, and the scent of their magic twined and overwhelmed. Hades recognized the rigidness in Persephone's stance because he had gone just as still. Her reaction relaxed him, probably because he found hope in the idea that he affected her in the same way. He considered challenging what was building between them, stepping close and drawing her gleaming hair away from her neck. He could practically hear her shuddering breath as he pressed a kiss to her soft skin. Would she melt in his arms then, or would she fight? He drew close. He did not think it was possible, but she became even more rigid, back ramrod straight. She was wound tight, a viper ready to strike. It was a bite he would endure willingly,
and he leaned in, his jaw brushing the side of her face, his lips touching her ear.
"You are full of surprises, darling."
He was too arrogant, he realized, unprepared for his body's reaction to her. Her scent sunk into his skin, igniting his blood. He grew heavy and hard at the thought of wrapping his arms around her waist, pulling her against him, consuming her.
Fuck.
An audible breath brought him back to reality, and before she could face him, he was opening the interior door to Nevernight, breaking the strange spell between them.
After you, goddess.
She blinked, and he noted the confusion in her expression. Maybe she thought what she had just experienced was an illusion. He half expected her to flee, but again, that spark of defiance entered her eyes. She kept his gaze as she brushed past him, both a challenge and a tease. He followed behind her and watched as she approached the balcony, eyes scanning the floor below. He wondered what she was looking for, but did not ask, just waited until she looked at him and continued down the stairs. Her heels clicked as she followed him across the floor, which was how he knew she had stopped moving, because the club grew quiet.
"Where are we going?" she asked.
There was suspicion in her voice, and he reminded himself that just because she had entered Nevernight willingly, it was not a show of trust. Hades paused, turning to look at her. He should not have looked back. It almost made him question what he was doing, luring this beautiful goddess farther into his realm.
"My office," he said. "I imagine that whatever you have to say to me demands privacy."
She raised a brow, glancing at the empty space.
"This seems pretty private."
"It isn't."
He turned and headed upstairs, pleased when he heard the click of her heels following. At the top of the stairs, he turned toward his office and opened one of the two large doors bearing one of his symbols in gold, a bident, coiled with vines and flowers. When he turned to Persephone, she was still standing a few feet away. Her distance frustrated him.
"Will you hesitate at every turn, Lady Persephone?"
She scowled.
"I was just admiring your decor, Lord Hades. I didn't notice this last night."
"The doors to my quarters are often veiled during business hours," he replied, and then indicated to the open door. "Shall we?"
She lifted her chin and breezed past him. He tracked her as she moved across the black marble floor and familiarized herself with his office, eyes settling first on the wall of windows that overlooked the club floor. It was a common feature in most of his offices, a way to observe from above. Despite the heat outside, Hades kept the fire going in his hearth. He liked fire, liked the way the flames danced, liked to watch it from his obsidian desk, but rarely used the sitting area arranged before it. Perhaps he would today, and invite the goddess of spring to sit. But that seemed too civil, and Hades had a feeling that whatever the goddess had come to say, it was anything but polite. When he closed the door, she again became rigid. It was then he realized he should have done more to reassure her she was safe with him after her horrific interaction with Duncan. He moved across the floor noisily, not wishing to startle her, and stopped in front of her, eyes searching her face, grazing her lips, before falling to her neck. Her perfect skin was reddened from the ogre's grip. It took everything in his power to stay where he was and not teleport to the underworld to torture Duncan.
"Anticipation is part of the torment," he reminded himself.
He reached toward her, wanting to heal those marks upon her skin, but her hand fastened upon his arm. Their gazes snapped together.
"Are you hurt?" he asked.
"No,"
she whispered. There was something intimate about this exchange. Maybe it was their proximity, inches from one another, skin touching skin. After a moment, he nodded and pulled his arm free from her grasp. He crossed the room, needing the distance so he did not do something stupid, like kiss her. The smell of Demeter's magic alerted him that she was about to raise her glamour.
"Oh, it's a little too late to be modest, don't you think?"
he asked, leaning against his desk, tugging his tie free from his neck.
He did not like the way it felt against his skin, like a restraint, but the movement drew her gaze, and he recognized the hunger in her eyes, because he felt it too, deep in his gut.
Did I interrupt something?
Her tone was almost accusatory, and he considered questioning her jealousy, but thought against it. Instead, his lips curled as he explained,
I was just about to go to bed when I heard you demanding entrance to my club. Imagine my surprise when I find the goddess from last night on my doorstep.
She glowered. Did the Gorgon tell you? He fought the urge to smile at her frustration.
No, Eurylee did not. I recognized your magic as Demeter's, but you are not Demeter.
He tilted his head, studying her like he'd studied her image in the Library of Souls.
When you left, I consulted a few texts. I had forgotten Demeter had a daughter. I assumed you were Persephone. Question is, why aren't you using your own magic?
Is that why you did this?
She demanded, removing a hideous set of bracelets from her wrist and holding up her arm, where a band of black dots marked her skin. He noted that she had avoided answering his question. No matter, he would come back to it. Instead, he focused on the mark on her skin, his mark, and smirked.
No, that is the result of losing against me.
You were teaching me to play.
Semantics, he shrugged. The rules of Nevernight are very clear, goddess.
They are anything but clear. She threw up her hands and then pointed at him. And you are an asshole.
He pushed away from his desk, stalking toward her. There was a part of him that wanted to demand respect, a part of him that wanted to remind her that he was king of the underworld, god of the dead. But as he approached her, he remembered who she was, Persephone, goddess of spring, his future queen. The thought calmed him, and yet she must have seen something else flash in his eyes because she took a step away.
Don't call me names, Persephone,
he said, grasping her wrist gently. He felt a strange energy between them as he reestablished their connection. He traced the shadow marring her skin, and she shivered beneath his hands.
When you invited me to your table, you entered into an agreement. If you had won, you could have left Nevernight with no demands on your time. But you did not, and now we have a contract. I could give her freedom.
The words entered his head, unbidden, born from his earlier thoughts, and he was suddenly overcome with guilt. It was true that there was no divine law, so he could let her go. But as he watched her, he peered beneath her fair exterior and saw her soul for what it was, a powerful goddess, caged in doubt and fear. This was the reason she used her mother's magic, because hers lay locked away, dormant. The longer he looked, the deeper he fell. She was intoxicating, and her magic smelled like sweet roses, wisteria, and something completely sinful. His own magic rose within him, wishing to tangle with hers. He wanted to draw it out of her, coax her to release.
Fuck, fuck, fuck.
He was not sure what she saw in his expression, but he noted the way her throat constricted when she swallowed, and he thought he'd like to kiss her there, feel her shudder beneath him. She spoke, her words dripped with restrained anger.
What does that mean?
It means I must choose terms, he said, certain.
Suddenly, this bargain had taken on a whole new meaning to him. He would pry the bars from around her body, free her from this self-constructed cage of hate, and in the end, if she did not love him, at least she would be free.
I don't want to be in a contract with you, she said between her teeth, her beautiful eyes flashing bright. Take it off.
I can't. I won't, he thought.
You put it there, you can remove it.
His lips twitched. He should not find humor in her plight. He knew this was distressing, knew she would not understand why this had to happen. Still, he smirked because she was defiant, because he liked her fire and frustration.
You think this is funny? She demanded.
Oh,
darling, you have no idea.
I am a goddess. We are equals.
She said the words, but he knew she did not believe them. You think our blood changes the fact that you willingly entered into a contract with me? These things are law, Persephone. She glared at him. The mark will dissolve when the contract has been fulfilled.
And what are your terms?
He considered what he had seen of her soul. She was a woman who equated divinity with power. It was the core of her insecurity, and it was that he would challenge. At last he spoke. Create life in the underworld. Her eyes widened and she paled, the impossibility of the words he had spoken registering quickly. His fingers tightened around her wrist.
What?
Create life in the underworld, he said again. You have 6 months. If you fail or refuse, then you will become a permanent resident of my realm.
You want me to grow a garden in your realm?
He grimaced. She had already decided there was only one way to fulfill the bargain, and that was via power she didn't have. Yet. He shrugged. I suppose that is one way to create life. It was a clue she did not catch. Instead, she glared at him.
If you steal me away to the underworld, you will face my mother's wrath.
Oh, I am sure, he mused, imagining it now. And yet it was the price Demeter would pay, first for bargaining with the fates, and second for hiding Persephone from him. When would the goddess of harvest come for him, he wondered. Much like you will feel her wrath when she discovers what you've so recklessly done. He hated that he spoke those words, and he considered reassuring her that he would protect her from her mother. But then Persephone straightened, met his gaze, and accepted his challenge.
Fine. When do I start?
He almost smiled. Come tomorrow. I'll show you the way to the underworld.
It will have to be after class, she said.
His brows drew together. Class?
I'm a student at New Athens University.
It was an example of how much he did not know about this woman, and he found himself curious. What was she studying? How long had she been in college? Where had she been living prior to New Athens? What had Demeter taught her about the divine? All things I will learn in time, he reminded himself. After class, then. They stared at each other for a long moment, still touching, still invading each other's space, and he found he was content with this, the silence, the feel of her energy, because it made his chest feel lighter.
What about your bouncer?
She asked suddenly. Hades frowned, brows lowering. What about him?
I'd prefer he not remember me in this form.
She lifted her hand to her horns, and Hades' eyes followed. They were beautiful horns, gracefully twisted into sharpened points. But as he looked at them, they disappeared from his view, covered by the glamour Persephone had called up. His eyes, again, fell to hers. I'll erase his memory, after he is punished for his treatment of you, he promised.
He didn't know I was a goddess, she said.
Do not come to his aid, he wanted to say. He does not deserve your kindness. But he knew you were a woman, and he let his anger get the best of him, so he will be punished. And I will enjoy the process thoroughly.
What will it cost me?
He focused upon her again, on her thick lashes, mesmerizing eyes, and sensuous mouth. Clever, darling. You know how this works. The punishment? Nothing. His memory? A favor.
Don't call me darling, she snapped, and he raised a brow at her sudden frustration.
Perhaps she thought he was growing too comfortable too fast.
What kind of favor?
Whatever I want, he said. To be used at a future time. She narrowed her eyes, skeptical of his request, and she should be. The most dangerous favors were those unspecified, and if she agreed, it would give him an idea of just how much she truly knew about what it meant to be divine.
Deal.
Nothing, he thought. She knows nothing at all. It made him more than curious. How could Demeter let her daughter enter a world run by the divine and know nothing of them? She had to know that sooner or later Persephone would find her way into this world. Despite his worrying thoughts, Hades smiled at her. I will have my driver take you home.
That's not necessary.
It is, he insisted. Hades was not in the habit of trusting the world. He knew too much about what lingered beneath its surface.
Fine, she snapped.
He frowned. She was probably more than ready to leave, except that he was not quite ready to let her go. Not on the heels of his last thought. Keep her safe, he thought as he grasped her shoulders, sealing the space between them. He had thrown her off balance, and her fingers clenched the front of his shirt, nails scraping his chest. He pressed his lips to her forehead, and the heat from her skin rushed to the bottom of his stomach, making his cock throb and his thoughts turn chaotic. He wanted to tilt her head toward his, to kiss her mouth and taste her tongue.
Focus on the task, he told himself angrily, and bestowed his favor upon her.
In ancient times, Greek heroes were favored by the gods, given special weapons and aid during battle, and on rare occasions, even a second chance at life. In modernity, favor could mean anything: access to exclusive clubs, insurmountable wealth, or protection from harm. Hades offered Persephone the latter, along with access to his realm. He released her from the kiss. Inches apart, she looked up at him.
What was that for?
She whispered. Hades smiled, brushing a finger across her heated cheek.
For your benefit.
Next time the door will open for you. I would rather you not piss Duncan off. If he hurts you again, I will have to kill him, and it's hard to find a good ogre.
Lord Hades, Minthi's voice interrupted. Thanatos is looking for you.
Oh.
The nymph's presence frustrated him, because it meant Persephone was no longer looking at him. She tried to pull away, but Hades held her tighter, refusing to let go.
I did not know you had company, Minthi said. Her voice dripped with judgment.
Perhaps Hecate had been right when she had suggested he tell Minthi about his future bride. A minute, Minthi, Hades gritted out, without looking at her. When she was gone, Persephone's gaze returned to his, and he studied her, lips pressed together. You haven't answered my question. Why are you using your mother's magic? He wanted to see if she would admit what he already knew, that she had no magic of her own. Instead, she surprised him by smiling.
Lord Hades, she said, her voice breathy and sensual.
She drew a finger down his chest, and the movement stirred his desire for her once again. He was going to have to find release by his own hand after this. He could not stand it. Did she know her power?
The only way you are getting answers from me is if I decide to enter into another gamble with you, and at the moment, it's not likely.
Then she took the lapels of his jacket and straightened them before leaning in, much like he had done earlier in the foyer, and whispered,
I think you will regret this, Hades.
Her eyes fell to the red polyanthus flower in the pocket of his suit jacket, and as she brushed it with her fingers, the petals wilted.
Chapter 6. A Soul for a Soul. Hades escorted Persephone downstairs. He wanted to ensure she accepted the ride home he had offered, and introduced her to Antony, his driver. The Cyclops waited patiently, dressed in a black suit and tie. When he saw Persephone, he smiled, his eyes alight. Lady Persephone, he said, this is Antony. He will ensure you make it home safely. While he knew the Cyclops would take care of her, he felt the need to make his point by holding Antony's gaze as he spoke. She is important.
Am I in danger, my lord?
Her question drew his attention, and he found her looking up at him. Despite the sarcastic tone in her voice, he sensed her unease.
No one will harm you, he wanted to say,
but those words would only inflame her fear. In truth, Hades was being overly protective. Perhaps it had something to do with the mortal he had tortured last night, the man who had threatened war from Triad. "Just a precaution," he assured her. "I would not want your mother banging down my door before she has a reason to." They stared at one another for a long moment before Antony cleared his throat and opened the rear car door. They both looked at Antony, who gestured toward the cabin of the car. "My lady," he offered.
"My lord."
Persephone spoke his title in that quiet, breathy voice. It made him think of other things, like how she might say his name as she found release beneath him. She turned and slid into the back of the car. As Antony shut the door behind her, he glanced at Hades. He knew that look. It was the "you'll thank me later" look. But Hades wasn't so certain. If Antony had not opened his mouth, he might have kissed the goddess again the way he had wanted to in his office. But maybe that was what the Cyclops was saving him from, because Hades was not certain he would have let Persephone go a second time. He watched as his black Lexus departed down the street. "I hope you know what you're doing," Minthy said, leaning in the doorway behind him. She had been eavesdropping in the foyer while he saw Persephone off. Hades kept his eyes on the car. It was in a turning lane, almost out of sight. "What do you think I am doing?"
"Encouraging her," Minthy said. "If you aren't careful, she'll fall in love with you."
He was glad he was not looking at the nymph, because a smile curled his lips. The Lexus finally moved out of view, and Hades turned to face Minthy. Her features were pinched and slanted, partly due to the brightness of the sun and partly from her seething judgment. "Was Thanatos looking for me, or were you spying?" he asked, referring to her earlier intrusion into his office.
"Why is it that every time I catch you doing something you shouldn't, I'm suddenly a spy?"
Hades did not like her words. The nymph pretended her role as assistant somehow meant she was his keeper. "And what should I not be doing, Minthy?" The nymph folded her arms over her chest.
"Tell me, Hades, would you have kissed her had I not shown up?"
"I did kiss her," he replied. The nymph's eyes widened and then narrowed as he continued. "If you saw something you disliked, Minthy, I suggest you knock in the future."
"Thanatos is waiting for you in the throne room," she said, before spinning on her heels and slamming the door behind her.
He sighed and teleported to the underworld, where he met Thanatos. The god of death was tall and slender, sporting white blonde hair and two black Gaial horns. Hades liked Thanatos and trusted him as much as Hecate. He was a kind god, and he cared for the souls. He had been one of their greatest advocates, more of a king to them than Hades had ever been. He bowed when Hades appeared, his large black wings sweeping behind him like a silken cape.
"My lord," he said,
and as he straightened, bright blue eyes met his.
"We have a problem."
"What is it?"
"The fates are in an uproar," he explained. "Atropos's shears have broken."
Hades raised a brow.
"Broken?"
Thanatos nodded.
"You had better come."
Dread pooled in Hades' stomach, but he agreed and followed Thanatos to the Fates Island. He found the three sisters in their weaving room. At the center of the room was a shiny black globe where millions of threads had been woven into the surface like a tapestry. Each thread represented a person, a fate that the Moirai had spun into existence. Usually, the three sisters sat in an arc around the globe. Clotho would start the thread of life, weaving it into the surface of the map, and when it was long enough, Lachesis would begin her work, weaving it into a destiny, while Atropos plucked and unraveled threads, determining the deaths of all souls, cutting their lifelines with her shears. Except when Hades appeared, Clotho and Lachesis were consoling Atropos, who wailed and sobbed into her hands.
"You must fix this, Hades," Lachesis demanded when she noticed him.
"Yes, you must," Clotho cried. "My shears, my beautiful shears," Atropos cried.
"I cannot help if I do not know what happened," Hades said, already frustrated with the three.
Did you not hear?
Lachesis spat.
Atropos's shears have broken,
Clotho seethed. How? Hades asked through his teeth, fingers tightening into fists. He was losing his patience, a dangerous quality when it came to the Fates. Hades knew he would have to handle this carefully, or he would find himself at their mercy.
Atropos? Hades asked.
It took a moment for the Fate to calm herself. Then she spoke, her dark eyes red from crying.
I picked a thread from the globe, chose and wove a death, and when I went to cut the thread, it would not sever. I tried again and again and again and again until my shears broke apart.
Her voice quivered, and she began howling again, a horrible keening that pierced Hades' ears and made him feel violent. He took a breath and held it until he felt a little less murderous.
Whose thread? Hades asked.
Breathing hard and sniveling, Atropos looked at Hades again, gaze fierce and wild. He recognized the feral look. It was the look of a goddess, ready for vengeance.
It is a mortal who seeks to cheat death, she fumed. Sisyphus de Ephra.
Hades scowled at the name, and a dark feeling crept into his chest. The mortal from the fishyard. It was not completely surprising that the man had somehow managed to find a way to defy the Fates. He had connections in the criminal underworld of New Greece, as well as to Triad. He probably tried a number of options, magical potions and spells cast by magi, mortals who practiced dark magic, even relics, until he found something that worked.
Fix this, Hades, Clotho exclaimed. Find him.
Lachesis shrieked.
Fix this, find him, Hades, said Atropos, or we will unweave the goddess of spring from your life. Yes,
they all hissed in unison,
or we will unweave the goddess of spring from your life.
Then you will invite a war.
Hades' eyes flashed, and he almost verbalized the threat, the promise he was now making, when the sisters began to scream. It took Hades a moment to discover why, but he finally spotted the source of their agony. A thread had risen to the surface of the globe between them and disintegrated, and it was not due to the Fates' will.
A soul for a soul, Hades thought.
The universe would have balance, even against the will of the gods.
Thanatos, Hades said, turning to the god of death. It was an order. Take us to that dying soul.
The god obeyed, and the two found themselves in the upper world, outside a dilapidated apartment in the Macedonia district. Hades recognized the smell of death immediately, sharp and foul and tangible. It was an odor he never got used to, one that seized his mind and sent him back to his early and ancient days on the bloody battlefield, where he had come to know the varying scents of decay. He exchanged a glance with Thanatos. They had come too late. Hades touched the door and it opened. Inside lay a man. He was sprawled on the floor, face down with his arms fanned out. It was as if he had just entered his home and collapsed, lifeless.
He wasn't due to die for another year, Thanatos said.
While it was not uncommon for mortals to die unexpectedly, those deaths were still orchestrated by Atropos. And someone had denied her that right. Hades stared down at the lifeless corpse for a long moment. The man was young, but his face was scarred and scabbed, and there were track marks and bruises in the crook of his arm.
Evangeline, the god thought grimly.
Name? Hades asked.
Alexander Sotir, Thanatos said. 33.
Hades frowned. A pang in his chest caught him off guard, but he recognized it for what it was, sadness. He would have liked to help this man overcome his addiction.
Hades, Thanatos said, look.
His gaze shifted from the body to Thanatos to the black scratches on the floor. They were wet and looked like drag marks. Hades followed them, and what he found in the corner of the room enraged him. It was Alexander's soul, and it lay at Hades' feet in a fetal position, broken and beaten. It looked more skeletal than human. The skin around it was like a membrane, blackened and tar-like. The state of the soul told Hades two things about how the mortal had died, that the death had been traumatic and unnatural. Hades had seen few souls in this state, and he knew there was no hope. This soul had no chance of healing, no chance of reincarnating. This was the end. "Contact Ilias," Hades instructed Thanatos. "I want to know Sisyphus's connection to this man."
"Yes, my lord," Thanatos said. "Shall I?"
"I'll take care of him," Hades said quickly.
"Very well."
He nodded and vanished, leaving Hades alone with the soul. The god stood there for a moment, unable to move. He had no doubt this would keep happening. Would every death break a soul? Would every death fray another thread connecting him to his future queen? He was certain of only one thing. He would find Sisyphus and reap his soul himself. Hades knelt and gathered the soul into his arms, teleporting to the Elysium fields. Despite the heaviness of the day, there was peace here in the silence, in the way the wind moved the golden grass. It was a space reserved for healing, and though Hades knew Alexander's soul would never recover from its horrific end, he would give him the best end. Beneath the brightness of the blue sky, Hades settled the soul beneath the leaves of a pomegranate tree, heavy with crimson fruit. "Rest well," he said, and in the next second, the shade transformed into a swath of red poppies. Hades traded the peace of Elysium for the horror of Tartarus, teleporting to the part of his realm affectionately known as the Cavern. It was the oldest part of his realm, boasting towering stone formations, shimmering draperies, and crystal pools of icy water. The natural beauty was marred by the desperate pleas of the souls who were tortured here. Part of the misery was the echoing cries that carried through the vast ceilings. Hades approached one of the stone slabs, where Duncan was stretched out, wrists and ankles chained. He had been stripped down, and a cloth covered his groin. His chest rose and fell quickly, a mark of his fear. His textured skin was coated in sweat. He turned his head and met Hades' gaze, beady eyes desperate.
"My lord, I'm sorry. Please."
"You put your hands on a woman," Hades said, cutting him off. "One who caused no harm, save for a few biting words."
"It will never happen again."
The ogre began to struggle against his restraints, panting as hysteria settled in. Hades' lips curved into a fiendish smile. "Oh, of that I am certain," he replied, as a black blade manifested in his hand. The king of the underworld leaned over the ogre, pressing the blade to his bulbous stomach. "You see, the goddess you touched, the one you attempted to choke, the one you left a mark upon, will be my wife." Just as Duncan bellowed his final rebuff, Hades plunged the knife into the ogre's stomach.
"I did not know," Duncan cried.
Hades dragged the knife down, cutting deep with the intention of exposing the creature's liver and summoning vultures to feast upon it. But the more Duncan repeated himself, "I did not know, I did not know," the angrier Hades became. The more he thought of Persephone, lithe and powerless, suspended by the throat from the ogre's very hand, the more his rage blossomed. He plunged the blade into the ogre's stomach once, twice, then over and over until he no longer spoke, until blood pooled from his mouth, until he was dead. Last, Hades cut off his hands, and when he was finished, he stood back, breathing hard, face splattered with blood. This had not been torture. It was a slaying. Hades dropped the blade as if it burned and drew his hands behind his head. He closed his eyes and took deep breaths until he felt calm again. He was insane, sick, and violent, How could he possibly think he might one day be worthy of love? The thought was laughable, and his hope was selfish. And he knew then that the only way he would ever keep Persephone was if she never discovered this side of him, the one that craved brutality and bloodshed. Later that evening, Thanatos found Hades in his office and offered a bundle wrapped in white cloth.
"Atropos's shears," he said.
Hades would take them to Hephaestus so the god of fire could restore them. The two were quiet, each lost in their own thoughts. After a moment, the god of death spoke.
"What sort of power would destroy the fates' magic?"
"Their own," Hades replied, which meant, more than likely, Sisyphus de Ephra had found a relic. After the Great War, scavengers collected items from the battlefield, pieces of broken shields, swords, spears, fabrics. They were items that contained residual magic, items that could still pose a threat if they fell into the wrong hands. Hades had worked for years to extract relics from circulating in the black market, but there were thousands, and sometimes it took a disaster to figure out who was in possession of one. A disaster like Sisyphus de Ephra. Hades would be damned if he let a mortal like him cheat him out of love. Ilias had delivered a file earlier. It confirmed what Hades had suspected. Alexander Sotir was addicted to Evangeline and in debt to his dealer, Sisyphus, but making the connection did no good until Hades located the mortal.
"What will you do?"
Thanatos asked.
"Visit Olympus," Hades replied, shuddering.
Chapter 7. Mount Olympus. Olympus was a marble city upon a mountain. It was bright, beautiful, and vast. Several narrow passages branched off from a courtyard rimmed with statues of the Olympians, leading to homes and shops where demigods and their servants lived. Like the gods and the world below, Olympus had also evolved. Zeus had ordered the installation of a stadium and theater in addition to the existing gymnasium where gods trained and mortals fought or performed for them. It was one of Zeus's favorite pastimes and a practice that had not changed, even though the god of thunder now lived on Earth. Hades did not often venture to Olympus. Even before the Great Descent, it was a place he preferred to avoid, much like he preferred to avoid Olympia, the new Olympus, but there were a few gods who still resided in the clouds, among them Athena, Hestia, Artemis, and Helios. It was Helios Hades wanted to see now. Helios, god of the sun, one of the few Titans who did not dwell in Tartarus. Hades found Helios resting in the Tower of the Sun, a sanctuary made of white marble and gold that rose over the other buildings on Olympus, a pillar cutting through the clouds. The surface gleamed with its own internal light, like the sun shining on water. It was the tower from which he launched his four-horsed golden chariot across the sky and where he returned at night. The Titan lounged upon a gold throne, his head resting on his fist as if he were bored, not exhausted from his work. He was dressed in purple robes, and his white blonde hair fell in waves past his shoulders, his head crowned with the aureola of the sun. Helios blinked slowly at Hades, his hooded eyes the color of amber.
"Hades,"
he spoke, acknowledging him with a lazy nod, his voice deep and resonant. "Helios," Hades inclined his head.
"You wish to know where the mortal Sisyphus is hiding?"
Hades said nothing. He was not surprised that Helios knew why he had come. It was the reason Hades was here. Helios was all-seeing, which meant he witnessed everything that occurred on Earth. The question was, had he chosen to pay attention, and would he choose to share with Hades now? Helios was a notorious asshole.
"He is not hiding. I see him now,"
the god answered.
"Where, Helios?" Hades said between his teeth.
"On Earth,"
the Titan replied. Since Helios had fought on the side of the Olympians during Titanomachy, the god of the sun felt that any aid he offered after their victory was a favor, one he did not have to bestow if he did not want to. "I am in no mood for your games," Hades said darkly.
"And I am in no mood for visitors. But we must all make sacrifices."
A spike of anger rushed through him, manifesting in a set of black spikes ejecting from his hand. Helios's eyes drifted there, and he smiled.
"Still struggling with anger, I see. How will you conceal your true nature from Demeter's daughter? Will you find more souls to torture? Perhaps I will begin with your son."
Helios's mouth tightened. His son, Phaethon, had been in the underworld for a long time. The naive boy had attempted to drive his father's chariot and lost control of the horses. He was struck down by Zeus after causing great destruction on Earth.
"He was a stupid boy who did a stupid thing," Helios said, dismissing Hades' threat.
"This mortal is a murderer, Helios," Hades said, trying again.
"Aren't we all?"
Hades glared. He should have known that appeal would not work. Helios had no real sense of injustice, having helped his granddaughter, Medea, escape to Corinth after she had killed her own children.
"Is it a bargain you want?" Hades asked. "What I want is to be left alone,"
Helios snapped, with more vigor behind his words than anything he had said since Hades arrived.
"If I had wanted to get involved in mortal affairs, I would have descended with the rest of you."
"And yet you use their land for your cattle," Hades pointed out, noting the shadow that passed over Helios's amber eyes. He had found the Titan's weakness.
"Perhaps I was wrong to set my sights on your son when you care more for your animals."
Helios's hands tightened on the arms of his throne. For the first time since Hades had arrived, the god straightened. Helios coveted his cattle, also called the oxen of the sun. They were immortal, and he kept them on the island of Sicily, guarded by two of his daughters. Anyone who harmed them would incur his wrath. Odysseus and his men had learned that the hard way. But Hades did not fear Helios's wrath, not when it came to a mortal who dared to cheat death, and not when it came to facing the unraveling of his fate with Persephone.
"You ask for blood, Hades." "If you are asking me if I will slaughter a few heads of cattle to get what I want, then yes, I ask for blood," Hades replied. "I will revel in the thought of your agony as I sit upon my throne with 50 of your cattle in the underworld."
Tense silence followed Hades' threat, and he could see and sense Helios's anger. It burned his eyes and raged between them, as hot as the sun's rays.
"The man you seek is being protected by your brother."
Hades already knew that was not Zeus. The god of thunder would never protect a mortal who had broken one of his most coveted laws.
"Poseidon," Hades hissed.
He did not get along with either of his brothers. But if he had to choose one to sacrifice, it would be Poseidon. The god of the sea was jealous, power-hungry, and violent. He did not like sharing power over the upper world with Hades or Zeus, and had tried more than once to overthrow the king of the gods, but all attempts had failed.
"You will not disturb my cattle," Helios said. "Are we clear, Hades?"
Hades narrowed his eyes but said nothing. As he turned on his heels and left the Tower of the Sun, he heard Helios call,
"Hades!"
Hades returned to his office at Nevernight. He considered going straight to Atlantis, his brother's island and home, and demanding to know where he was hiding Sisyphus. But he knew his brother, knew the violence that swirled inside him was greater than the anger Hades attempted to keep at bay. Any accusation leveled at his brother, even if it held truth, would infuriate the god. By the end of the encounter, thousands would be dead. Hades could not help thinking of Alexander's soul, broken beyond repair.
One soul taken before its time was too many, and the god knew there would be more like him if he did not act fast. He had to come up with an alternative plan, something that would gain Hades the truth he needed and prevent destruction. His eyes fell to the white bundle he had left on his desk, Atropos's shears. Perhaps Hephaestus would have a solution. He gathered the bundle in his hands and started to teleport when Minthy knocked at his door and threw it open, strolling into his office. "Entering before being invited defeats the purpose of knocking," Hades said tightly, frustrated by the interruption. "I'm busy." "Tell your side piece," Minthy countered. "She's downstairs." Hades' brows furrowed.
"Persephone is here?"
She was not due to arrive until this evening for her tour of the underworld. A strange feeling unfurled within his chest. It felt exciting, almost like hope. But as he moved to the windows that overlooked the floor of Nevernight, those feelings darkened. Persephone had brought a companion, a man he recognized immediately as Adonis, Aphrodite's favored mortal. His eyes darkened. "I told you this would happen," Minthy was saying. "You encouraged her, and now she thinks she can demand an audience with you. I will tell her you are indisposed."
"You will do no such thing," Hades stopped her. "Bring her to me."
Minthy raised a brow.
"The man too?"
She was trying to goad him, and it worked because Hades could not help answering with a bitter hiss.
"Yes."
Minthy made a strange sound in the back of her throat, something akin to a laugh, and then left. Hades' gaze returned to the floor below. Persephone stood apart from Adonis, arms folded over her chest. Despite her audacity, he wanted to see her, especially on the heels of the Fates' threat. He would just be punishing himself if he sent her away. Besides, he wanted to know why she had come and brought a mortal with her. When Minthy walked into view below, he turned away from the window, sat Lachesis's bundle aside, and poured himself a drink. If he did not have something to distract him, he would pace, and he'd rather not illustrate the chaos of his mind right now. By the time Minthy returned with Persephone and Adonis in tow, Hades had positioned himself near the windows again. He barely registered Minthy's approach, because his eyes had locked on his goddess the moment she entered the room.
"Persephone, my lord," Minthy said.
She was determined. He could see it in her expression, the way her head was tilted, her lips pressed into a hard line. She had come here for something, and Hades found himself eager for a time when she would approach him with a smile, with no reservations or hesitations, because she wanted him and nothing else.
"And her friend Adonis," Minthy continued.
At the mention of the mortal's name, Hades' mood darkened, and he looked at Adonis, whose eyes widened under his scrutiny. He found it strange that Aphrodite would take this man as a lover, given her attraction to Hephaestus. They were complete opposites. This mortal, untouched by the sufferings of the world. His skin was smooth, his hair glossy and not singed by the forge, his face free of stubble, as if growing a beard would be a hardship for him. And then there was his soul, manipulative, deceptive, and abusive. Hades glanced at Minthy, nodding.
"You are dismissed, Minthy. Thank you."
With her exit, Hades downed the remainder of his drink and crossed the room for a refill. It was not polite, but he was not interested in appearing pleasant. He spoke once his glass was full, leaning against his desk.
"To what do I owe this intrusion?"
Persephone's eyes narrowed at his words and tone, and she lifted her head. He was not the only one fighting to be amicable.
"Lord Hades," she said, taking a notebook out of her purse. "Adonis and I are from New Athens News. We have been investigating several complaints about you and wondered if you might comment."
Another thing he did not know about his future bride, her occupation, a journalist. Hades hated the media. He had spent a lot of money to ensure he was never photographed and denied all interview requests.
He did not refuse because he had things to hide, though there was plenty he preferred to keep to himself. He simply felt that they focused on the wrong things, like his relationship status, when Hades would rather give the spotlight to organizations that helped dogs and children and the homeless. He lifted the glass to his lips and sipped. It was drink or show his anger in a worse way.
"Persephone is investigating," Adonis said with a nervous laugh. "I'm just here for moral support."
Coward, Hades thought before focusing on the notebook Persephone had pulled from her purse. He nodded to it.
"Is that a list of my offenses?"
He would be lying if he said he had not expected this.
She was the daughter of Demeter. She had been told only the worst about him.
He knew because she had looked at him with such loathing when she had discovered who he was the night of their card game. She read a few of the names on the list: Cicero Sava, Damon Elias, Tyrone Lycos, Chloe Bella. She couldn't know what hearing those names meant to him or how it made him feel. It reminded him of his failures. Each one was a mortal who had entered into a bargain with him. Each one had been given terms in hopes that they would overcome the vice that burdened their soul, and each one had been unsuccessful, resulting in their death. He was relieved when she stopped reading from the list, but then she looked up and asked, "Do you remember these people?"
"Every detail of their face and every worry on their soul."
Again, he sipped his drink.
"I remember every soul."
"And every bargain?" This was not a conversation he wanted to revisit, and he could not help the frustration in his voice as he spoke, angry that she was bringing this up. "The point, Persephone. Get to the point. You've had no trouble of it in the past. Why now?" Her cheeks flushed, the tension between them building. A solid thing he would destroy if he could. It made his lungs hurt and his chest feel tight. "You agree to offer mortals whatever they desire if they gamble with you and win." She made it sound like he was the aggressor, as if mortals did not beg him for the chance to play.
"Not all mortals and not all desires," he said.
"Oh, forgive me. You are selective in the lives you destroy."
"I do not destroy lives," he said tightly. He offered a way for mortals to better their lives. Once they left his office, he had no control over their choices.
"You only make the terms of your contract known after you've won. That is deception."
"The terms are clear. The details are mine to determine. It is not deception, as you call it. It is a gamble."
"You challenge their vice. You lay their darkest secrets bare.
I challenge what is destroying their life," he corrected her. "It is their choice to conquer or succumb."
"And how do you know their vice?" she asked.
A wicked smile crossed Hades' face, and suddenly he thought he understood why she was here, why she was leveling these accusations at him, because she was now one of his gamblers. "I see to the soul," he said, "what burdens it, what corrupts it, what destroys it, and I challenge it."
"You are the worst sort of god."
Hades flinched.
"Persephone?" Adonis spoke her name, but his warning was lost over Hades' reaction.
"I am helping these mortals," he argued, taking a deliberate step toward her. It was not his fault she did not like his answer.
She leaned toward him, demanding, "How? By offering an impossible bargain? Abstain from addiction or lose your life? That's absolutely ridiculous, Hades." Her eyes had brightened, and he noted that her hold on her mother's glamour had faltered the angrier she became.
"I have had success." She would know that if she was not so eager to only see the bad in him. Wasn't that the mark of a good journalist? Understand and interview both sides?
"Oh, and what is your success? I suppose it doesn't matter to you as you win either way, right? All souls come to you at some point."
He moved to close the distance between them, his frustration boiling over. As he did, Adonis stepped between him and Persephone,
and Hades did what he had wanted to do since the mortal stepped into his office. He paralyzed him, sending him to the floor unconscious.
"What did you do?"
Persephone demanded and started to reach for him, but Hades took her wrists and drew her flush against him. His words were rough and rushed.
"I'm assuming you don't want to hear what I have to say to you. Don't worry, I won't request a favor when I erase his memory."
She scowled at him.
"Oh, how kind of you,"
she mocked, her chest rising and falling with each angry breath. It made him aware of their proximity, reminded him of the kiss he had pressed to her skin the day before. Heat curled in the bottom of his stomach, and his eyes dropped to her lips.
"What liberties you take with my favor, Lady Persephone."
His voice was controlled, but he felt anything but composed on the inside. Inside, he felt raw and primal.
"You never specified how I had to use your favor."
"I didn't, though I expected you to know better than to drag this mortal into my realm."
Hades glanced at Adonis. Her eyes widened slightly.
"Do you know him?"
Hades ignored that question. He would come back to it later. For now, he would challenge her reason for coming to Nevernight to begin with.
"You plan to write a story about me?"
He felt himself leaning in, bending her backward and holding her tighter, sealing their bodies together. He was certain the only way he could get closer to her was if he was inside her, a thought that made his stomach feel hollow and his cock hard.
"Tell me, Lady Persephone, will you detail your experiences with me? How you recklessly invited me to your table, begged me to teach you cards?"
"I did not beg."
"Will you speak of how you flush from your pretty head to your toes in my presence, and how I make you lose your breath?"
"Shut up."
It amused him that she did not want to hear this. All the ways she communicated her desire for him, all the ways her body betrayed the words that came out of her mouth. Her body was supple beneath his hands, and he knew if he trailed his hand between her thighs, she would be hot and wet.
"Will you speak of the favor I have given you, or are you too ashamed?"
"Stop!"